Welcome to Voice of Albion with Paul Hickman on the White Network.
This is Hunter Kunte. A load of black people and a load of fucking Polish. A load of fucking... You're fucking... You ain't English.
No, I'm not.
No, you ain't English either. You ain't English. None of you fucking English. Get back to your own fucking... Do you know what? Talk about your own countries. Don't come and do mine. Britain is nothing now. Britain's fuck all. My Britain is fuck all now. Britain's fuck all. My British is fuck all.
Excuse me, there's little kids on the tram.
Yeah, it's fine.
May we have to take
I've got a little kid in.
Well, have respect, yeah?
Have respect
for little boys here. We don't use those words.
I've got a little boy here.
Yes, well, get off the tram then.
Fuck you.
And you.
Fuck you.
Did someone need to throw you up?
Really?
Yes.
I'll dare you. I'll fucking dare you.
Just watch your language, man.
Don't watch my language. Go back to where you come from. Yeah. Go back to some fucking Nicaragua or where you come from.
No.
Where is that? If we don't come here, you guys don't want to work.
No.
You guys don't want to work. We have to do the work for you. Go and work.
Like, I work. It's my British country. Until
so
I let you lot come over.
So what?
Tonight we have a guest also from Croydon, which is in South London, called Tony Martin. Hi Tony, thanks for coming on.
Hi Paul, thanks for having me on your show.
We are taking calls tonight. The easiest way to call in is to log into Skype. Just search for The White Network in the search bar and press call on the white icon. If you're in North America, there is a call-in number, which is 1-833-443-4911. Firstly, Tony, we should just point out you're not the farmer, Tony Martin, who went to jail for shooting a burglar and later was a BNP candidate.
No, I'm not. No, that's correct.
Okay, so you became involved in nationalism in 2007 with the British National Party, and you have stood in local elections as well as the parliamentary election of 2010, the big breakthrough, was supposed to be. I see you stood in the Ashburton ward in 2010 and got 5.9%, and in the general election of 2010, you stood in Mitcham and Morden, which is a constituency of Greater London, and got 3.2%. Does that sound right, Tony?
Yeah, that sounds right, Paul, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, that night was a big disappointment. I think we should get that out of the way first. I was at the count in Birmingham as the text rolled in of the bad results, and I remember trying to keep people's spirits up, saying, well, you know, we're going to get somewhere, don't worry. And, well, I think we left the count early, and it was a very solemn journey back in a taxi. Did you attend the count that night in 2010? What was it like?
Yes, I attended the count, Paul. Well, first of all, I'd like to say that it was a great honour to stand in Mitcham and Morden. Firstly, because I live just about a mile outside of the constituency, so that, although it's not where I live, it's very, very near. And And although that night was a big disappointment nationally, I was reasonably pleased with the results in Mitcham and Malden. No nationalist had stood there since John Tyndall stood there in 2001.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah. And I managed to come fourth, beating the Greens and UKIP put together. So
it doesn't sound too bad when you put it that way, does it?
Yeah, so I was getting probably the same text as you, so I was well aware of what was going on nationally, but locally it was a pretty reasonable result. Also, considering there was a screw up at the BNP with the leaflets, so I think most of the people in the constituency didn't receive my leaflet. So
I think I know what you're talking about, because I remember getting sort of text messages asking me to go and help at the depot. Oh, no, I'm not sure if it was the BNP's fault or the Royal Mail. I think it probably was the BNP's fault that they hadn't put the leaflets in a certain number. So the Royal Mail just said, we're not delivering them. And then they all had to be sorted out into the correct number. Does that sound right?
Kind of, yeah. I went to Nuneaton to help out with the
that's right,
with sorting the leaflets out. I was there for two. I originally only went up there for the day, but they was in that sort of dire need of help. Myself and a friend who, like I said, originally only went up there for the day, landed up getting a hotel room and staying over and doing 2 days. What had happened is they'd been printed the wrong amount of leaflets. And for a lot of the wards, there wasn't enough leaflets. And then for other constituencies, we were left over with a load of leaflets left over once we'd sorted them out into the correct bundles.
Well, the thing is, Tony, it's not the first time it happened, because it also happened in 2009 for the Euros, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Did you go down to that depot by Wales and did a
same I didn't, thing? No. Some other people from the Croydon and Sutton branch went to, I think it was Welshpool, wasn't it?
Yes.
And they went up there and helped out, but I didn't actually help out that year, no.
Got you. Okay. So now you are South London branch organiser of the National Front. Well, I remember meeting you back in 2011 at a BNP conference. What are your reasons for moving to the National Front? I mean, it's not an easy option, but what are your reasons, Tony, for making that decision?
Well, I didn't feel that the BNP were taking politics very seriously. Myself, along with a number of other nationalists, had put a lot of work into the GLA campaign of 2012 in the early stages. And then senior members of the party came along, disbanded the selection committee and inserted what I'd call a novelty candidate. And originally, at the time, I wanted to carry on with the BNP, and I said, I'll carry on as Croydon and Sutton organiser, but I'm not going to help out with anything to do with the GLA. And for about 6 months, myself and a couple of other local activists, instead of helping out with the GLA, we was just going out with generic leaflets, leafleting in Croydon and Sutton. There was a bit of a falling out just before the actual GLA. Because people felt that I should have done more, but I'm a volunteer, and I put the way I see things is I'm involved in nationalism because I believe in it. And if they've got a candidate that I don't believe in, I'm not going to put myself out in the same way as I would do for a stronger candidate.
When you talk about the candidate, was it the mayor or candidate, Carlos Cortiglia?
Yes, sorry, yeah, it was Carlos Cortiglia, the mayoral candidate, yes.
He's a real embarrassment, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got it's not just the fact that he's obviously foreign. He's got a tendency just to start shouting for no apparent reason at times. And I've found him uncooperative with other things. And like I said, I wasn't prepared to put myself out for him.
No, I don't think I would either. I mean, he's even written kind of blog posts for the Jewish Chronicle.
I didn't know that, no.
Yeah, I can send them you, because they've been deleted, but someone took screenshots. So this is the kind of person they put up these days. Someone who writes for the Jewish Chronicle. I really disliked him as well when we was at the Lee Rigby demo, which was the last thing I did for the BNP. And he started saying, he did his little speech and he's saying, you know, Asalaamu Alaikum, which is peace be with you in Arabic or Urdu. So, yeah. I mean, I just couldn't believe it. So, yeah, I mean, that's understood. So would you say it's kind of the ideological direction that, you didn't feel that the BNP, I mean, with their selection of candidates and stuff like that?
Yeah, exactly. Look, obviously, when they brought in the allowing non-whites to join, it was put across to us that it was a last resort and it was something that we had to do. And then once it came in, it seemed like it was being embraced by people. Some people were actually embracing it and not just doing the bare minimum that we were told was expected of us, but like deliberately picking candidates that are non-British and having photos taken at meetings with people that are not white.
That's it. Yeah, that's right. Okay. So I noticed you attend public meetings and you send freedom of information requests. That is a valuable activity for white nationalists to do, I think. I came across a Croydon Advertiser article dated 21st February 2011, which you're involved with. The article is entitled Croydon MP Gavin Barwell rejects BNP claim after rant is published. So let me just quickly read through that, Tony, okay?
Okay.
So the article reads, the British National Party is to make an official complaint against Gavin Barwell after the MP publicised one of its candidates' rants about violent immigrants in quotes in New Addington. The far-right party alleges Mr Barwell breached the Data Protection Act when he sent a questionnaire filled in by Clifford LeMay to the Advertiser nearly a year and a half ago. In the pamphlet, Mr LeMay urged the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, to stop ruining our community by stuffing New Addington with violent immigrants who have no rights to live amongst decent civilised white people. He also referred to Mr Barwell, who he ran against for the Croydon central seat in the general election last May, as a traitor to his race and nation, in quotes. Now Mr Barwell has received a letter from the BNP threatening to take the matter to the Information Commissioner. Mr Barwell told the Advertiser, it's completely bizarre. I've never heard of anyone in a political party complain about their views being made public. Perhaps he is ashamed of what he said, as he should be. In the letter, Tony Martin, the BNP's Croydon and Sutton branch organiser, wrote, in mid-2009, Clifford LeMay received a questionnaire sent out by your organisation. Cliff filled in and returned the completed questionnaire only for it to be printed in the Croydon Advertiser. Recently, I've been looking into the legality of this leak and who is responsible. It looks illegal under the Data Protection Act 1998, and Gavin Barwell has confessed to this indiscretion on his blog. I contacted the Information Commissioner's office and was told to contact you first before making any official complaint. When the Advertiser contacted Mr. Martin, who has replaced Charlotte Lewis as Croydon and Sutton branch organiser, he pointed out a promise made on CroydonConservatives.com not to share information with third parties. The disclaimer under the heading Information Collection and Use reads, we never sell or share information to anyone outside the Conservative Party. Mr. Martin added, I want to get the message across that we are not prepared to be trodden on. The Conservatives promised never to share information, but this is exactly what they did. We're not looking for conversation, but an apology. Mr. Barwell admitted the privacy disclaimer existed, but added, were it the response of a private individual, I wouldn't have released it. But this was something running for public office, so people have a right to know his views. After giving Mr. Barwell a deadline of 7 days to respond to his concerns, Mr. Martin says he now intends to submit an official complaint to the Information Commissioner. Can you tell us what happened there, Tony?
All right. Well, the actual article in the paper was pretty accurate for the first part. What actually happened after that was, obviously, because he's gone to the press with my complaint rather than actually getting back to me. I didn't actually receive a response directly. So, like we said, we went to the Information Commissioner's office. Well, we didn't go, but we sent them a letter officially complaining. And it took a while. I think it was like 6 months or might have even been a year. But eventually Cliff got a letter from the information commissioner saying that the Conservative Party had admitted that they'd failed to follow their own data protection policies, and they were willing to retrain their people that are involved in data protection issues, which I'd assume would mean Gavin Barwell as well. So I contacted.
In that way, he's kind of admitting that they're wrong, but in the paper he says it's bizarre. It's a bizarre complaint.
Yeah, this what I'm talking about now is after that. I'm talking about almost like 6 months later. Okay. Like once we'd actually made the official complaint.
Got you.
So I contacted him on Twitter to ask if he was going to apologise, and he said he had no intention of apologising, and started attacking the data commissioner, the information commissioner on Twitter.
Oh right.
He also contacted a via Twitter a local journalist, the same one who wrote the article that you just read out. Mm-hmm. But obviously they knew that they were involved in it as well, and I don't think they wanted to touch the story. So nothing else was published in the paper about it. But the okay. Information commissioner found in our favour.
Oh well, that's a little victory. I mean, these local papers, they always stand on the side of the main three parties MPs. But I think it is good that we have people kind of within our ranks that will look into these little laws and rules and pull them up on it now and again. Because let's face it, if we put any foot wrong or, you know, break any data protection or anything like that, that'll be on us like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's good. I think it's good that you do things like that. All right. For the benefit of British listeners, could you explain how the Freedom of Information requests work and how people would go about making a Freedom of Information request themselves? I know they do work because I've made a few. One example was the Birmingham City Council, and I asked them how much they spent on Jamaica in the Square Day, which was basically some kind of sort of celebration of Jamaican independence, although there's probably more of them over here than there are in Jamaica. And, you know, they had all the flags out and all the food and all the music and all this stuff. So I thought, well, how much is this costing? Taxpayers' money, of course. And I found out that way it cost £45,000 for one day. So that was worth doing. But as you've done it quite a lot, could you just explain how they work and how other people can do it?
Okay, Paul. Well, first of all, well done for finding that out. £45,000 is a lot of money for the likes of most taxpayers, but it seems that councils like Birmingham City and Croydon appear to be fabulously wealthy and can afford to just throw around £45,000 as if it's nothing.
What I had in mind to do was then ask how much Dave was spending on St George's Day. That's coming up now. I'll hopefully remember to do it this time. I forgot last time, but I bet you they don't spend £45,000 on it.
Be lucky if they spent £45, I would have thought, let alone £1,000.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the Freedom of Information Act gives anyone the right to request information from any public organisation in the UK. They're supposed to respond within 20 working days. Freedom of information requests are an important part of campaigning. I've had a number of successes, but I've also hit a number of walls where they haven't been very cooperative. The advice that I would give anyone wanting to make freedom of information requests is to word it as simply as possible. Something that might seem like common sense that you or I would understand. The people dealing with these information requests sometimes, I assume, deliberately misunderstand the question. So you've got to really word it in sort of simpleton kind of terms, or of almost a legalese where there's no sort of way of wriggling around it.
But what website should they go on to in the first instance?
I usually go on the website of whichever organisation it is.
Someone told me that you can go on a site called What The Day Know.
Oh yeah, you can do that as well. And then if you go on that, whatdotheyknow.com or .whatever it is, then it actually publishes it publishes the your question and the answer.
Yeah, that's right. So if you live, for example, in Manchester and you make an account on What Do They Know, which is free, and then once you've activated the account, say you've got a question about hospital in Manchester, how many immigrants are they employing or something like that, then first you put in Manchester and then it will have which department. So if it's to do with council spending, you'd put Manchester City Council. Or if it's to do with hospital stuff, you'd put the name of the hospital. Or if it's to do with education, you'd put, you know, Manchester Education Board or whatever the relevant department is. And then you write your Freedom of Information request through there, and then you automatically get answers and updates via your email.
Yeah.
So you was doing it a little bit different. You was kind of doing it directly, I guess.
Well, I've done it both ways. I've done it the way that you just said, where they publish the results on that website, and anyone can view it, and you can obviously view other people's requests. But you can also do it directly via the websites and the emails of the actual organisation, like Croydon Council's website or the Met Police website. And then that way their response is just back to you. So if you don't get the result you're looking for, other people can't see what you've been up to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's good. Hopefully that's of use to somebody. I thought it was quite interesting when I first found out. And yeah, it works. It's free. I mean, I understand what people say about these kind of computer commandos and stuff who just sort of type comments here and there or besmirch other people's work. But some stuff on the computer is actually worth doing. Now, obviously, as an organiser, as you would know, you have to do a lot on the computer, i.e. Emailing to people, setting up meetings and stuff like that. But there's also information requests, which is computer-based. So if somebody's like not really fit enough to get out there, or their job's so sensitive they can't really get out on the streets or stand as a candidate, and that's kind of something useful they can do. But so at the start, the intro we played was Emma West. I saw people call that multicultural hell experience, so I'd say that's about right. So you've met her. What was she like? Did she mention what happened before she started shouting? I mean, because I know what these muds are like. When there's one white woman on the bus or this kind of thing, did they spit near her or did they swear at her or anything like that? Or did she just snap, being fed up with living as a racial minority in her own country?
Well, I've only met Emma briefly, but she seemed like a pretty normal person to me. I understand she suffers from bipolar, which she keeps under control most of the time, but it does cause her to have episodes like what we saw. I did hear that an ethnic spat on the ground just in front of her young son.
I've heard.
I don't actually know whether that is accurate or not, but I have heard that. I have heard that from a couple of different people.
Mm. Well, I think she spoke for millions because she's only saying what people thinking. Okay, she's maybe swearing a bit and she had a son there, but I mean, you know, it just seems to me there was a woman who completely snapped. How long did they keep her in jail? Didn't they have her in jail for like a month or something?
Probably in total, yeah. What happened was, I believe at the time, British Transport Police moved her off the tram. They may have even taken her home, and they weren't really looking to do any further action. It was only once the video went viral on YouTube that and obviously the media got involved that the police decided to act on it. We even had Gavin Barwell, the MP that we was just talking about earlier on the show. Mm-hmm. He's actually her MP. He's the Croydon Central constituency, covers New Addington, where Emma comes from. And so he is her MP. And he put up on his blog, hang on a second, I've just got to look at a note here. He put on his blog, "It's people like this we could do without in this country." And he put a link to the original video that clearly showed Emma's young son's face. And then even since then, since he's found out that she suffers from bipolar and that she's attempting to take her own life. He's still left that up there on his blog, which I think
What a piece of shit. I mean, what about that black woman in the video who says, if we don't come here, you know work. What about that? I mean, that's what we don't need in this country, you know?
Yeah, well, that's what they're told. That's what these politicians say. A lot of these ethnics, they believe it. The black woman that you're talking about, she probably believes it. She's been told it by all these politicians. Oh, thank you for coming here. Nothing would get done if you weren't here. And they don't question it. They're quite pleased with it and they just believe it.
See, these agency companies get these Africans and stuff. They send them to these poorly paid jobs, which white people would do. We always have done. Most people have got, like, you know, cleaners in the family, like, who, you know, their nan or their mum might have been a part-time cleaner or something like that. It's very, very usual for working-class people to make up their money like that. You know, if the man works full-time, the woman might do a bit of cleaning or something low-paid. Nothing wrong with that. The English people, they know their rights, you see. So if they go somewhere and their money's withheld or they don't get any of these kind of extras, which they should get, like overtime money or something, we won't put up with it. But with these Africans, you see, they'll do it because they're doing it for the long term, well, what you'd call the stay, aren't they? They're doing it for a passport eventually, so they'll put up with it. So it's kind of like the big business capitalists, they love all these Africans and Asians coming over to do jobs, and as you say, that's what they're told. The white people won't do the jobs.
Exactly. Yeah, it's supply and demand, and that the more people there are here, the it pushes wages down and it pushes house prices up. So for big businesses, landowners, landlords, and people like that, it's wonderful for them. It's no good for the likes of you and me.
That's right. Am I right in saying you found out via a Freedom of Information request that, despite the Crown Prosecution Service citing death threats against Emma West as the only reason to deny her bail, because it was going to keep her in over Christmas at first, they failed to report any of the threats to the police. Is that right? How did you kind of get that information?
Yes, that's correct, Paul. I was sat in the public gallery at Croydon Magistrates Court when they refused to give her bail. And she was supposed to be kept in over Christmas. And the main reason that they gave for refusing the bail was that allegedly there have been a number of death threats made against her online.
Maybe that would have helped if they hadn't released her full name and the road she lived on. Because you often hear these terrible crimes and they'll say, we can't give the name out for legal reasons. So basically what they did, they put a name out there, the newer picture was out there, and they put a road in the press. So it doesn't take a genius to work out where she lives, does it?
No, it doesn't, no. Because I contacted the police for a Freedom of Information request to try and find out, or to make sure that they were taking these threats seriously. I was well aware of one particularly nasty threat that I'd seen on YouTube, and a number of people from the BNP at the time had complained to the police about it. And the response I got from the police was that they was investigating one threat that they'd received several dozens of complaints about, but they weren't investigating any complaints that had been forwarded to them by the Crown Prosecution Service. So they considered it serious enough to warrant keeping her in prison over Christmas, but not serious enough to warrant reporting to the police.
That doesn't make sense, does it?
It doesn't. No, it just goes to show that they were just playing on it. The threats were silly threats by people halfway across the world who had no intention of carrying it out. Like you mentioned earlier about the keyboard warriors. That's the kind of people that were making the threats. And there was no reason whatsoever to keep her in prison over Christmas, which is why her family got a solicitor and they went back to court again. I wasn't there this time because I didn't know about this hearing, but they managed to get her out, I think, a week or so afterwards.
I thought it was pretty weak, the response from the BNP, because I was still in them at the time. I mean, I remember people sending me texts and saying, you know, why have we not sort of spoken out about Emma West? And the reason was apparently that some people didn't agree with what she said, but it also became clear that the reason that the British National Party leadership didn't speak out, it wasn't because the family had asked for not for a big fuss. What they must have meant by not a big fuss, they didn't want sort of, you know, hundreds of people turning up or being at the court or this kind of stuff. But I would have thought at least a statement would have been right. But the only leader who came out with kind of a statement in Britain, Britain First did their bit. But I remember Richard Edmonds, he was quite involved with it and he spoke up about it, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, I was involved from the start as well. At the time, I was the Croydon Sutton organiser. And as soon as we found out who she was, we went to visit her house and we knocked and we spoke to her partner. And he told us that he didn't want any demonstrations. So I passed that back up the party, and we were attending court basically to record what was going on, to observe what they were up to. And obviously we caught them out for remanding her when she should have been released under the ruse that her life was in danger. No, you're going, Paul. Okay.
So the activists, they're a bit, but the leadership was kind of silent, as I remember.
Yeah, I think Griffin said a couple of things, but I don't remember him making that big deal of it. You know?
No sort of articles on the website saying, you know, why is this woman being kept in prison without charge, really, when you've got these criminals who damage people, hurt them badly, and they walk free, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it's pretty weak. But not long after the Emma West situation, the video, there also surfaced a video of a horrible Negress racially abusing white people on a London bus. And what did you find out about her? Who was she? Was she ever arrested?
Yes, Paul. Her name was Vandell Brooks. She was a 34-year-old woman who lived in Hackney. And she was arrested, but unlike Emma's case, the police did everything they could to conceal her identity and details of the case. I literally had to keep emailing the police every few days and phoning Thames Magistrate Court to find out what was going on. She was due in court one day. I phoned the court to ask what the result of the case was, and I was told that she hadn't turned up and a warrant had been issued for her arrest without bail. So I carried on emailing the police to find out if they were trying to catch her and if they caught her or she'd handed herself in or anything. And then eventually I got a response from them saying that she'd been to court. She'd received a sentence of 7 days in prison and a £200 fine, which for the American listeners, I believe, is about $320. That was both for the original offence and for failing to appear in court. So it's a lot more serious than Emma's case. But I believe because of that she was treated a lot more leniently by the press, the Crown Prosecution Service and the police because of cultural sensitivity and obviously the colour of her skin.
Well, yeah, that's right. I mean, I'll post a video of the video link to that in the show page. I suppose it depends. Obviously, if you're black, you're going to be more offended of what Emma West said. And if you're white, you're going to be more offended of what that black woman said. But you can see in the video, it's a lot more aggressive. She's standing
definitely,
up.
Yeah.
She's in people's faces. She's waving her arms around, all this kind of stuff, where Emma West was just sitting down and just voicing off. And as you say, why do the media, they do it two different ways. Emma West's face and address while her road was all over the place. And I wouldn't have known that black woman's name unless you said it. So I don't remember seeing anything in the paper about that, whereas Emma West was front page news and all this kind of thing. It really makes you sick, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah, there was a small article in the Daily Mail about the original video, but I don't believe that they followed it up with her name or the fact that she'd been arrested or any of the cult things. They just sort of hushed it. It's like racism's a one-way street, isn't it? As far as the media is concerned, that's something white people do.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, good for finding that out. What's her name again?
The Black Van one? Vandell Brooks.
Vandell Brooks, okay. I understand you've questioned some senior political figures at the public meetings you go to, such as the bumbling buffoon Boris Johnson, who is currently the Mayor of London. Could you talk a little bit about that?
I've questioned a number of public figures, including Sir Bernard Hogan Howe. He's the Met Police Chief Commissioner. Obviously, Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, as you've just mentioned, and the journalist David Aaronovitch. Invariably, they've failed to answer my questions, but that shows them up, really, that they can't answer the question. I ask them a question, and with Boris Johnson, I think he had about, I'm guessing he must have had a list of about 10 different answers that he just, whatever question anyone asks him, he just gives the nearest one. I asked him about police numbers, and I was saying with the police concentrating on thought crimes, i.e. things people have done on Twitter and Facebook, and also with the increasing number of people in London who don't have English as their first language, I asked him how many extra police officers that he would envisage that we'd need just to maintain current levels of policing. And then instead of answering that, he just sort of drifted off to say that they're trying to increase the number of uniformed officers and sort of dodged my question, which is basically what they all tend to do.
Rhetoric.
Yeah.
And what about the police chief? What did you ask him?
Well, I had quite a good one there because I was sort of near the front row at a meeting. First of all, a bit of background. Last year, Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, who we're talking about, he was doing a tour of London every 4 weeks, going to a different area, and he's basically promoting the cuts in policing, like you'd expect from a politician. He told a number of lies, and that he was saying that that all government budgets are being cut, which I'm sure you're well aware that foreign aid is being increased, so they're not all being cut. And I found that I think someone in his position should be fighting for his budget rather than going around telling people, oh, it's okay that we're cutting police budgets. We need to cut the police budgets. It's fair. What he should be doing is he should be going to the government and saying, this isn't fair. We need more money.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I bring it up, it's a bit like the freedom of information request. Now, because I haven't been to that many council meetings or constituency meetings, but I've been to some, and you do find out some good information. So more for people who don't like to go out on the street leafleting or campaigning or stand as a candidate, what they can do, they can go to these local meetings, and you get like a printout which tells you the expenditure and the expenditure from the last quarter, for example, and what they're planning on spending. So if you see something that's not right, which you do, you can stand up in the meeting and ask questions about it. Now, these elected councillors and politicians, they have to put it in the minutes. They have to record it because it's an official meeting. And they have to mention it at the next meeting. So if you bring up an issue and say housing or something, and then you go to the next meeting and they don't bring it up, or they haven't answered it, then you've kind of got them on the back foot, right? Because you can say, you can get up and you can say, councillor such and such, I asked you about this the last meeting 2 months ago. Why haven't you got back to me? And they'll squirm around as they do, but it's just a way of keeping up the pressure. I mean, as an example, there was one constituency meeting I went to, and constituency meeting covers the four wards in a constituency. And for one of the wards that spent, I think on St. George's, no, sorry, on Christmas celebrations, that spent £200, 200 and something pounds, very paltry sum. And then for the Asian Women's Sewing Club, £8,000. £8,000 for the Asian Women's Sewing Club, £200 for Christmas. And this was not even an Asian area. It was probably, I don't know, 70% white, 30% non-white. So this is what they're doing. these councillors and MPs, they're taking all this money and they're not giving it to our people. They're giving it to a small minority, possibly because they know that these people will vote and our people have given up voting for the most part. I asked, I says, where are these sewing machines? Because you could see pictures of them on the wall, you know, but I couldn't see any. I was like, £8,000 buys a lot of sewing machines. Now, you know these Asian women are into that sewing, so I can imagine what happened to them. They probably ended up in some shops or something, or sold off. But it's just a good thing to do, because if I wasn't there, I would have never known that. Now, it so happens I put it out in the leaflet, and, I didn't get voted in or anything, but at least it shows that you kind of know what you're talking about. Because if you're going to stand as a candidate in the election, it's worth going to a few of these meetings, because there's no other way you're really going to know this information, where's money being spent and all this kind of stuff. So that's basically why you go to the meetings, right?
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, it also helps to get them used to seeing your face as well. Like the majority of the councillors in Croydon Council now know what I look like and who I am, and they know that if they sort of misbehave, I'll be on their case.
So you went along to was it a by election that Richard Edmonds stood in, and I think you went along the council meetings with him.
Yeah, well, what to the count you mean? Or
was it the count or the council meetings?
It was the count. Right. Yeah, I think it was just the count. Yeah, that's actually the ward I live in. It's not a particularly good ward for nationalism anymore. It's majority ethnic, but we'd literally just formed our branch the same day that we found out that the local MP had died. So we thought, as to let people know that we're about, Richard decided to stand. And he didn't get that many votes, but he was never going to get that many votes.
What was the count like? Did you get any grief?
No, not really. That could have been a lot worse, because there was obviously Lee Jasper was there. I don't know if you know Lee Jasper.
He's
a black activist who's sort of completely anti-white. He was one of the candidates.
Oh, was he? Was that for the Respect Party?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
George Galloway's party.
Yeah, and the media made a big thing about him, and he didn't do at all well, really. I think he came about fourth or something.
Yeah, that's why I was glad, because before Galloway, the leader was Salma Yacoub, and she lives fairly near to me, and I really did not fancy her becoming an MP in 2010, and she did pretty badly as well, and she's since dropped out, and she had that kind of argument with Galloway, because he made some comment about rape, didn't he? His comment about rape was kind of your typical sort of Muslim male kind of argument that, well, she shouldn't have been wearing a skirt or something like that. And so they kind of had a bad falling out. Well, yeah, he's a real crook, isn't he, Jasper?
Yeah.
He's avoided jail pretty closely himself, hasn't he? Embezzling funds and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact details there, but I know that sort of his involvement in sort of stoking up sort of riots or almost riots, and that the sort of police are just happy when he's being quiet, really.
Yeah, I believe it was Ken Livingstone's kind of racial advisor or something like that.
That's correct, yeah.
It's been in the mainstream news. He embezzled a load of money, and he kind of got let off. Yeah, well, didn't he say anything to you or Richard Edmonds then? I thought he would say something snidey, like, you know.
No, by that stage, he just ignored us. At Hustings, prior to that, he came up to me, must have not known who I was, and went to shake my hand and said, like, hello, I'm Lee Jasper. And I just said, I know who you are, and just ignored him.
Yeah. But, so these anti-whites, I mean, he's got to be at least, what, about 30% white himself, isn't he? Because he's got that kind of red skin.
I think he's like a quarter Irish, quarter African, and half from the Caribbean, although I might have got the African and Caribbean bit the wrong way around.
Yeah, he's mixed. Oh, well. Okay. I also see you are on a local Unite Against Fascism page, what we call Unite Against Freedom. And the title is the Croydon Nazi, election candidate, the Hitler saluters, and the anti-incinerator campaign. Let me just read through that for the listeners, Tony, okay?
Okay.
So that's the title. It's from February 2014. It's got a picture of you at the top. Tony Martin, National Front candidate for Crowham in Croydon. And it reads, we can reveal that the National Front's candidate for Crowham ward in the May Croydon council election is a hardened Nazi who takes pictures of local campaigners to intimidate them and surrounds himself with people exposed for throwing Hitler salutes. Tony Martin, a self-employed 36-year-old blank resident, is due to stand for the seat this year and wants to run for Croydon South in the 2015 parliamentary elections. A friend of Holocaust denier and convicted racist attacker Richard Edmonds and I Hate Jews, Muzzies and Niggers Twitter tirade author David Child. Just a second, I didn't know Richard Edmonds is convicted of a racist attack. I believe it's something to do with Nelson Mandela statue, right?
He's been convicted on the Nelson Mandela statue. He was fitted up for an assault. I don't think it was racial though. I wasn't around back then, but he was accused of throwing a glass, but it wasn't an ethnic. So I don't know where they get the racial.
I think we know which side the violence comes from.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's David Child?
David Child is he's sort of a bit of a nutter, really. He's involved with the BNP at the moment, although he has come over to the National Front a couple of times. And basically, he had a Twitter account, and he was coming up with all sorts of different things on there. And they done an expose on him in the same website that you've just been talking about.
What they do, right, so people know, they'll take a picture of you, and there might be five or six people on there, and you're not responsible for every single thing that person's ever done or every single tweet he's ever tweeted. But the way they put it is, well, that's how they link it together. So it's pretty weak, but I'll carry on.
Yeah, especially with David Child, because when they actually exposed him over his Twitter account, he actually tried to blame me. So so I'm hardly friends with him. And they even said in their previous article that was the one that was about him, not the one that you just read out. It said that he left the National Front because the South London organiser, i.e. myself, is, I forget the exact words, but friendly with Negroes and a couple of other things there. So he's been slagging me off all over Twitter and to anyone who listened to him. So I find it ironic that they're saying that I'm friends with him now.
And it goes on, Tony is an old school Hitlerite who is willing to use intimidation against his political enemies. Tony has also a penchant for hanging about with people who like doing Nazi salutes. His best mate is Chris Hurst, former London BNP official, who had to be seen to be thrown out of the party in 2011 after he was filmed giving a Hitler salute at a Hungarian neo-Nazi festival. Also present was Tony's other best pal, Hungarian fascist, Szolt Benzsik, who acts as a connection between the British far right and the parliamentary Jobbik Party, the paramilitary Jobbik Party, which is responsible for the murder of ethnic minority people in Hungary. Well, they certainly make a few leaps here, don't they? I mean,
yeah.
So somebody does a Nazi salute in Hungary, and that means he's your best friend just because you've been on one photo with him.
Well, to be fair, I'm good friends with Chris Hurst and with Zolt. I'm not going to deny that. And the way I see it is, I don't go around doing Nazi salutes myself. I don't really see the point in it. But I'd rather hang around with someone who does things like that than someone who waves a hammer and sickle flag like all these UAF types do.
Exactly. And then it goes on, when he's not going door to door with his Nazi mates and a handful of leaflets drawn with crayons, Tony likes to take pictures of activists who submit to the Red Watch website. Red Watch is designed to be a place for Nazis to post pictures and addresses of anti-fascist campaigners in order to intimidate them into silence. But it turns out Tony is also taking pictures of Croydon and to incinerate the protests and gay rights campaigners in order to try and frighten them. Sorry, Tony is a paranoid Nazi conspiracy theorist who thinks gay people are trying to undermine Western civil society and that everyone who doesn't worship Adolf Hitler is a red that needs their vote taken. He plans to use racism to win votes in up-and-coming elections, but unfortunately for him, he hasn't banked on being exposed as a vile Nazi. Well, I mean, it's the usual double standards there, Tony, because when they bitch about having their photos taken, which they did about 3 times in that crappy little article, they forget to say that they're always taking pictures of people, they're always using intimidation, that these communists have been using intimidation for decades. And that's just not our opinion, because they brag about it. They've been bragging about it for decades. It's all over the internet. And so you take pictures of people who are kind of, you know, putting out anti-white, anti-British campaigns and waving communist flags. Well, there's no law against that. If you want to take a picture of someone who's doing something in public or take their photo, you're perfectly within the law. But this is just what we get from them, taking pictures to try and frighten them. What a joke. Do we stop them from having meetings? Do we call up the landlords of pubs where they're having their meetings and threaten them with violence or threaten to ruin their livelihood? No. That's what they do. So do you have any comments on that article?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Firstly, I agree with what you're saying. If they don't want to have their photo taken, they shouldn't be going on demonstrations or anything like that. I go on demonstrations and I'm well aware that I'm going to have my my picture taken. So I try and make sure I'm clean shaven and dressed reasonably smart.
That's right.
Also, an interesting thing is the they say about intimidating anti-incinerator campaigners.
Yes. Yes.
Well, what it's actually laughable, because what happened there was I was invited along on a demonstration that was it was a cross-party demonstration. There was people from the entire political spectrum from around the sort of South London area were invited on this demo, including myself. And what it is they're Labour, Conservative and the Liberal Democrats are looking to build a massive incinerator in a populated area that's literally about a mile and a half from where I live. And I was invited to go on the demonstration to demonstrate against the three main parties and their plans. And I went. I was on the march. I met up at the RV point, which was just around the corner from my house. And then we walked into Croydon. We laid a wreath made out of rubbish at the council, and then we went into a local gardens, and a few people read some speeches. But I was there as part of the demonstration. I wasn't there intimidating anyone. We even went to the pub afterwards. I think what they've done is basically they've gone on my Facebook thing and they've just taken a load of pictures, and then just they don't know what the pictures are, and they've just made up a story to go along with it.
Yeah, people should have their Facebook settings to private, I think, unless they're like your friends. Because what I do, I set it so nobody can see the details unless it's a friend. But people do get caught out an awful lot, don't they? I mean, we're probably not that bothered in the National Front at the end of the day. I mean, if we want to stick up a National Socialist picture, we can stick it up. It's not a problem because we're past that stage. But other people in other parties, I mean, even UKIP, they keep getting tripped up, don't they? They think, well, how did they find out? You know, and all it takes is for someone to add you. You don't know them. You click add, and then they're sort of looking through all your photos and looking for little bits and bobs.
Yeah, because one of the photos that they took, it wasn't on my Facebook page. It was on someone else's one, and their thing was set to private. And so it must be someone who's on their list who's a wrong'un. It's so easy to do. You could even take a picture of someone and use their name and not be that person. And you don't know. You could have someone on your friends list who you think who you think you know, you think you've met them in person, but it's not even that same person. It's an impersonator.
If you're doing things in public, you should not do anything which you wouldn't want ending up on Facebook or on one of these anti-white sites. That's what I think.
Yeah, I never put anything on Facebook or Twitter that I'm not prepared to say or do in public and stand by.
Yeah. Well, we've only got like 4 minutes left or so. So it looks like we may not be standing as National Front candidates this year due to the ingoing problem. However, I think the year 2014 is going to be a bit of a bit dud anyway, because UKIP are going to scoop up everything. So it's probably more about 2015. I would predict that UKIP will do very well in these elections, and local elections, Euro elections. And then before 2015, either one or two things will happen. Either they will be destroyed by the establishment in conjunction with the media, because I'm sure they've got more than enough dirt on Farage and his other MEPs to destroy them, or they will make a pact with the Tory party and therefore just become part of the mainstream. So anyway, I'm undecided what I'm going to do this May. I may stand as an independent and put something in the message which will be on the ballot. Like, I might just put something like anti-racist is a code word for anti-white. But if I do that, I'm not gonna be getting leaflets done and all that stuff, because I'm not gonna waste time. But what are your plans for this year and next year in Croydon, Tony?
Well, it's looking like I'm going to be standing as an independent. Obviously, I'd rather stand as a National Front candidate, but I am going to do a leaflet, because I've been working on it for quite a while already. So I'm going to put that out. Also, the ward I'm standing in for council comes under the same parliamentary seat that I'll be standing in next year. So any work won't be wasted, because it'll go towards the parliamentary elections. I agree with what you were saying about UKIP falling apart. Once the Tories promise a referendum, that's it for them. But as far as the media digging them out, I find that rather than the media trying to destroy them, I feel that the media are more trying to make them come across as more right-wing than they are, so that they lose votes to the Tories, but then take them off the likes of us and the BNP and the BDP and people like that.
Well, I agree with that at the moment, but I'm saying, when the establishment decides UKIP have done their job, time to get rid of UKIP, then the media is going to do what the establishment says. That's how it seems to me. And I know they're trying to say that's not the case. That what I think will happen, they'll start bringing in all these, you know, all these sleaze stories and all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
Okay, we've got just under a minute left. Well, good luck with your campaign. I didn't mean to be negative there. It's good that you're getting the leaflet done. I'm just saying I'm not going to get a leaflet.
That's understandable.
The last minute, I've not got it planned, but I'll help other people with their campaigns, and I should hope to come down to Croydon and give you a hand, Tony, with a few of the Birmingham National Front.
Okay, thanks very much, Paul. That's appreciated. You've got somewhere to stay if you do come down here. So thanks for having me on the show, and I look forward to campaigning with you again in the near future.
Okay, yeah, thank you for coming on the show, Tony, and I'm sure we'll do this again sometime.
Yep, it's been a pleasure.
Best wishes, 14 words.
Thanks very much, 14 words.
See you, Tony.
See you later.
And thanks for listening. See you next Sunday, listeners.
Thanks for listening to Voice of Albion on the White Network.